A couple of times I have referred to the earthquake image. For some reason that stuck in my mind, because in Matthew's gospel there's an earthquake at the moment when the women arrive at the tomb. And also because those images of the earthquake in Turkey 2 months ago are still stuck in my mind, with all those buildings collapsing, thousands of people dying. And this image of the earthquake is like the opposite. This is a positive earthquake. In the first few days after an earthquake, it's search and rescue time, right? I mean, it's not time to rebuild the buildings. It's time to find the survivors, dig through the rubble, find and save as many people as you can. Well, this is the opposite. Now, Jesus is the one who they thought is dead, and he's alive, and he's going in search of the people who died or who look like they're dead. And that seems to be what happens in today's gospel. Jesus goes in search of these two disciples on the road to Emmaus. It's search and rescue. They're at risk of dying spiritually if they're not dead already. So this is just a glorious moment of the Easter octave to read about what else happened on that first day of the week. This is one of those accounts which is, it's like a great book or a great movie or a great song, a classic. You can go back to it again and again and again and always get more out of it. You can always, you never get tired of it. This is one of those passages, the story of the two disciples on the road to Emmaus. So I'm going to focus only on this, even though the first reading is also a great reading about the miraculous cure of the man who was crippled from birth. We just don't have time to cover it all. But let's focus on this experience of the two disciples. Let's situate this in the chronology that we know from John's Gospel. In John's Gospel, Mary gets to the tomb. She sees it's empty. She runs to tell the apostles the tomb's empty. Peter and John run to the tomb. They find out, yeah, it's empty, and then they go back. Then, as we heard yesterday, Mary stays at the tomb and meets the risen Lord. These two disciples were there when the women first arrived and said the tomb was empty. They heard that the tomb was empty. They know that Peter and John went to the tomb and discovered, yes, it's true, the tomb is empty. Peter and John have come back and said, yes, it's empty, but they didn't see the Lord. And then these two left. Right in the middle of the unfolding of the news about the earthquake, they leave. And they head on the road out of Jerusalem. It's quite a striking thing to reflect on, because this is what we do when we're disappointed, or when we can't face the loss. We tend to just leave, escape. One of the two is Cleopas. I think it was last year, or maybe 2 years ago, I ran across this interpretation that this Cleopas is actually Clopas. Were you here when we had a kind of reflection on this? I don't remember where it came from, but whoever came up with this says, well, this Cleopas is actually Clopas. The name is just slightly different. And Clopas' wife, Mary, was at the foot of the cross. Remember, Mary and Mary, the wife of Clopas. So according to this interpretation, these two are Clopas and his wife, a married couple, leaving Jerusalem. And Mary is the one who was Mary, wife of Clopas, was the close follower. Clopas, well, we never heard of him any other time, so we don't know about him, but maybe he was taking his disappointed wife out of town because this was too much. Now, it probably isn't that. I mean, that this is a married couple, but I like the opportunity to ponder that, because married couples very often experience a deep disappointment in the project of life, and and their hopes are shattered. Very often it's because of they're disappointed in each other. And so they might not be walking down the road together, but sometimes not. Sometimes it's maybe a tragedy in the family and they are both suffering from it, or they're hurt by the church. I've known couples who have left the church together. They've walked away from the church together because of something that happened in the parish, or something that was an offense, disappointment, shattered hopes. Maybe it's a child who's gotten into drugs or something. And the two are saying, we were hoping it would be like this, but now it's not. And now the game's over. What can we do now? Let's get out of here. Now, whether it's a married couple or not is not actually that critical. It's just a good way to ponder the experience of being with someone with whom you are also suffering dashed hopes, deep disappointment. So it's a journey, but it's a very dark journey. It's a journey, a hopeless journey. I think all of us know what that's like. Very often we're journeying alone in that experience, but sometimes we're journeying with others. In this case, it's two disciples. Now, the beauty of this, the first beautiful thing is, Jesus joins them on the road away from Jerusalem. He doesn't just let them run away. He accompanies them. This is the favorite term of Pope Francis, accompaniment. And the first step of evangelization is accompaniment. You just meet people where they are. You join them in their journey. You discuss with them what is on their hearts. You let them share freely what is their burden. That's the first step. And that's what Jesus does. He doesn't walk up to them and say, hey, I'm risen, hallelujah. He walks up to them, or they meet on the road, and he says, what are you discussing as you walk along? What's going on in your life? I'm interested in you. You look like something's troubling you. What's up? That's a kind of open-ended, it's an open space for the two disciples to share their experience. Jesus does this. God does this. And this shows us how God is at work when we are in our deep disappointments, when our hopes are smashed, and we just don't know what else to do. And we think, well, God is no longer part of the scene here, so I might as well get out. That's exactly when he is part of the scene, and he's accompanying us, and we just don't recognize him. Isn't that accurate? Isn't that very accurate? We just don't recognize him. We don't even know that he's with us. We're walking along arguing and talking and lamenting and complaining and whatever, and God is right on the road with us. We just don't recognize it. Whether he's there in an invisible way or whether he's there through some other person, that doesn't matter. It's still God at work. And usually he does work through people. Doesn't usually just show up like this in a resurrection appearance, but this is to show us, this event shows us a kind of pattern that is always true. How does God relate to us when we're depressed, when we have no more hope? Well, he joins us and he listens to us. So he's walking along with them and they're telling the whole story. At some point, Jesus sees that he has an opportunity to inject something that they don't have. He wants to shine some light on these two in their dark place. And this is how God does it. Now, why he does it at the times he does and how he does it, who knows? But he at some point says, let me shine a little light on these people, because this is a dead end. They're going in the wrong direction. I'm going to show them how foolish they are. Oh, how foolish you are. It's a great line. That's what God says to us. Oh, how foolish you are. Now, he doesn't say it to us when we're at a point of, when the danger is that we'll feel rejected, and that it will make things worse. He doesn't hit us when we're at the lowest point and say, you're a fool. But when we realize that we have someone to talk to, we're not alone, that there's actually some light at the end of the tunnel, then he can say, oh, look how foolish you are. Look at the stupid path you're on. Don't you understand anything about what has been revealed? And then he explains the scriptures. He's still walking along with them, still walking away from Jerusalem. And they still don't recognize him. But their hearts are burning within them. They're having an inner experience of new life, of light. Their minds haven't caught up to it yet. And I tell you, this is really how it happens. We don't usually understand things until we believe. We don't usually have an intellectual grasp of what's going on until it's already somehow pierced us interiorly, until our hearts are lit on fire. So this is happening. Their hearts are burning within them. They're talking to this guy. They're starting to realize that there's a lot more to the story than they were thinking. Now, they still don't know Jesus is risen, but they're realizing that God had a plan from way back in the time of Moses and the prophets, and that plan was really being unfolded before them in the life of Jesus. And then this guy says he's going to go keep going. Now it's their turn to invite him. See, he's taking the initiative, but he's not forcing himself on them. He could walk on, and if they don't want any more, well, they're lost. But they take the initiative. Wait, no, wait, stay with us, stay with us. They have a concern for him. Now you see how they're outside of they're beyond the complaint, the lament that they had sunk into. Now they have a concern about somebody else. Life isn't all about them and all their disappointed hopes. Now they know a man who's going to walk off into a dark, unknown road and say, well, no, that's evening time. Stay with us. So they want him to be with them, but they also don't want him wandering off into the darkness. So this is what happens. And then they sit down at dinner together. What could be more normal than eating together after you've had a conversation? God enters into normal situations, sits down at the table with us. That's when this revelation moment comes. He performs the blessing, the breaking of the bread and the distribution of the bread, and they realize, wait a minute, we've seen this before. And as soon as they realize who it is, he disappears. Why? Because now they know him in a way they didn't know him before. They don't have to see him with their eyes anymore. They can see him with their hearts, which have been caught on fire. And they know that he's alive. They know that he has revealed himself personally to them. They know it. They're not going to sit there anymore. They've got to go tell the good news. So they rush back to Jerusalem. Now, this is a fundamental pattern. It's also reflected in the Mass. I think you know that. We've talked about this before. The liturgy of the Word and the liturgy of the Eucharist is clearly established here. But I want to, for our sakes, that's very important, but for our sakes at this stage, I want to just focus on identifying how God relates to us, how he accompanies us when we're in darkness, when we are disappointed, when we're lamenting, sad, hopeless, down, whatever it is. How does God relate to that? Well, he joins us. He listens to us. He journeys with us. He's present to us. He doesn't make himself, he doesn't force himself on us. He sparks hope within us, even though it doesn't even make sense to us. We start to feel like there's some reason to keep journeying, and maybe we should start praying again. maybe it's time to have a little prayer time. And then when we take our own initiative in response to His grace, it's always, he always starts it, but we have to respond. When we take a little initiative to invite Him in to stay with us, our eyes are open. So this is the faith experience. It's the kind of the classic description of what goes on all the time, what God is doing all the time, and we don't recognize it. But now it's Easter octave. Let's open our eyes, or let's let God open the eyes of our hearts so that we can see Him and rejoice in His presence, in His victory, in His personal presence with us, in His gift of Himself to us.